idea that Linux is fun and the myriad of ways people put distros together should be reviewed often. My name is Moss. I live in Eastern Tennessee.
And my name is Tony, and I live in the northwest of England.
Welcome to Distro Hopper's Digest. We love checking distros out, new distros, new versions of older distros, and maybe even some old distros we've missed. I have my preferences, and Tony has his. Perhaps together we can find some common ground to share with you.
The idea of the podcast is that we each install a new distro to our chosen hardware for 3 to 4 weeks and use it as much as possible, perhaps even as our daily driver. We record all our trials, tribulations, fixes, what we liked and what we didn't.
I like to find distros which would be kind to a new user, especially one who is hoping to move over from another operating system, such as Windows or Mac OS. We intend to give as much information as possible on each distro, and we'll also divulge what hardware we're using and how we think the hardware may have affected the rating. Welcome to Distro Hopper's Digest, Episode 4, recorded on 31st July 2019. For this show, Tony is reviewing Debian Buster, and I am reviewing Farin OS and roaming all over the place on my new laptop. We'd like to hear from you what you'd like to see us take on, be it Debian, Red Hat, Arch, SUSE, Mandriva, Slackware, or Gentoo-based distros. So, Tony, how are things on your side of the pond?
Aye, it's not too bad today. A bit cloudy and overcast, but yesterday it was a bit of a monsoon, so the weather's improved somewhat than it was yesterday. I got soaked.
Yeah, we've had temperatures in the 90s Fahrenheit until yesterday, and it's dropped back down into the 70s and 80s, and a bit of threats of rain, but not much.
Yeah, well, that's a bit more. It's a bit more comfortable here at the moment than it was last week. It was in the 80s and 90s last week, so it's cooled down, and there's not as much humidity in the air today.
Cool. On to this month's ramble: my adventures in laptop land and Farin OS. Okay, Farin OS and other travails. My hardware: I run a Lenovo ThinkPad T430 with 8 gigabytes of RAM and a 500 gigabyte hard drive with Intel chips. And I just purchased a Lenovo IdeaPad 110-15ACL-80TJ with 4 gigs of RAM and a 500 gigabyte hard drive and AMD chips, each of which I keep partitioned into 4 partitions, each with its own distro, with an external hard drive for my data and backups. I'm going to do things a bit differently this month and try to go through what I went through with my old and new computers with setup and installation. I have begun to worry that I am underqualified to be a host for this show, as I only seem to be able to get Debian/Ubuntu-based distros to work, plus a few outliers, have zero interest in Arch or Red Hat, and have some really limited viewpoints. But on the other hand, new users are more likely to relate to my experiences than they are to those of other shows' super experienced users, as I go for distros which would be welcomed by new users. I should also comment that we've had some really positive feedback on some of the groups, so maybe people like me more than I do. Tony?
Yeah, I think this is a difficult one. I'm a bit like yourself. I don't always feel that I've got loads and loads of knowledge about Linux, but you know, I've been playing with Linux for the last 12 years, and it's amazing how much you pick up without realizing you're picking it up. You kind of soak it up through the pores as you talk to different people in the community. So as you say, you know, being a little less technical brings a different viewpoint about Linux than someone who's maybe working on the back of end of a server every day and runs Linux as the daily driver. They can understand the nitty-gritty of how the kernel works, but on the other side of the street, we're still looking at the same street, but from a different vantage point, so to speak. So we bring a different perspective, really.
Okay, well, this month I really had wanted to review OpenMandriva LX4. I have loved Mandrake/Mandriva in the past, and OpenMandriva LX3.03 was so close to perfect that I was salivating waiting for 4 to go stable. So I attempted to install OpenMandriva LX4 on my T430, but it locked up when I set my external display, a 32-inch Magnavox TV connected as a VGA monitor. The mouse pointer was not frozen, but everything else was, and I only had a black background. I installed it successfully without using the external monitor, which was very hard on my eyes, and then switched displays and it locked up the same way again. I reported the bug. Much more recently, I received a mini display port to HDMI adapter cable needed to send HD output on a T430 and tried to install it again. This time I got the pretty wallpaper and the mouse cursor. So I still have not successfully installed and used OpenMandriva LX4 on my T430. I looked at Farin OS Next some and decided it wasn't what I was looking for, and after reporting a few things to the developer, I went with KDE Neon 18.04, but I'll get into that later. So on to business, and Farin OS with the standard Cinnamon desktop. I will first talk about my installation experience on the ThinkPad T430. In 2016, Farin OS had a new trick, a program called Themer, which could, with a couple of mouse clicks, change your entire desktop to resemble whatever you wanted it to, from various Windows desktops to Mac OS to any of dozens of Linux desktops, all within Cinnamon and with a solid Linux Mint base. In 2017, it was changed. The Linux Mint base was dropped for Ubuntu GNOME, and it just wasn't the same. Oddly, the Wikipedia page for Farin OS did not describe the Ubuntu period. In 2019, they reverted to Linux Mint and Cinnamon. Calamaris Installer has a bug I had earlier discovered in OpenMandriva LX4 and have reported to the Calamaris team. When you try to install over an existing partition, it formats that partition and creates a new one, and then creates an imaginary partition of the same size and has trouble deciding which one to write your installation to. I've got a figure of this in the show notes. The blue and gray partitions shown are exactly the same size, and both replace the blue partition and the before shot, all other partitions being identical. The first time I did this, I allowed Calamaris to ignore the imaginary partition if it would, and write itself to the correct area. Things did not go so well. It appeared to be installing parts of the operating system to the correct drive while dropping chunks into the imaginary partition. This happened to me with OpenMandriva LX4 as well, although the bug was not in OM3, so I was kind of expecting it to happen, I just wanted to see. So I had to do it again and used manual partitioning. You check something else when prompted which partition to use. Installation went well after that. After installation, I tried to load additional software and was informed that the Mint Store was not installed. Okay, that gets installed by running updates. But the Farin OS repositories were not to be found. I contacted the developer and he pointed out that the bug had been reported and gave me the fix for it. This distro uses Vivaldi as its default browser, which is a security-based version of Chromium. I am not fond of Google of late, so I installed Firefox and reminded myself to delete all instances of Chromium from my lists of things to do. I usually do that for LibreOffice anyhow, since I use SoftMaker Office. It's just sudo apt remove dash dash purge and the name of the program with an asterisk at the end. I got Mulvad and the printer installed without any problems. I then made sure I had Audacity, Mumble, and HexChat. Smooth as silk. I'm not a Cinnamon fan, and this distro depends on Cinnamon to do a special theming trick, which is the main feature of Farin over Linux Mint. Farin OS Next is an attempt to substitute KDE Plasma 5 to do the theming. On day 2, I tried to run Stacer and couldn't find it. I went and got the old edition, 1.0.9, and it installed over 1.1.0, then informed me there was an update. I installed the update just to see what would happen and once again could not run Stacer. It turns out to be a known bug with Stacer 1.1.0, versions 1.0.9 and earlier work fine. For those of you who don't know, Stacer is a really good graphical program for showing you your system resources and uses and gives you a whole lot of tools. Actually, a few too many. I've known to mess up a system every now and then by trying to uninstall things I didn't think I was using. I did check out the accessibility controls as suggested by a listener. The high contrast works well, though the icons are considerably different. The zoom feature sets a static zoom level rather than letting that be adjustable, and the scroll feature works well. In terms of updating, I found that the update manager defaults to automatic updates. This gets in my way, as I've learned over the years to do my updating in Terminal. Automatic updates seize control of all apt usage until they're complete, resulting in gobs of error messages and feeling like you're back using Windows. Incidentally, it overrides if you open the update manager because it's already busy with apt in the automatic updates. Turning it off is easy. You can find that information on many sites on the internet. After a few chats with the Farin OS dev in Telegram, I decided to reinstall Farin OS yet again, still on my T430. Installation went smoothly after selecting manual partitioning. I then installed restricted codecs, chose a layout with a panel clock, and was good to go. So my third installation went the way my first should have. There is a nice selection of other layouts to choose from, Windows XP, Windows 7/8, Windows 10, Mac OS, or Linux Mint layout with more available later. You can check light or dark and pick a desktop background color, then select whether to enable, default, or disable animations. And then you get the thank you for choosing Farin OS page and click the enjoy button. I then set my displays, did my updates, and ran into the bug of not being able to update. I then went to attempt to fix the update bug according to the instructions I had received from the developer. The fix worked. Updates are installed. There seem to be quite a few Qt/KDE5 programs being installed now, which brings into question why Cinnamon? And the answer turns out to be because he's getting set up for Farin OS Next, which uses Plasma. Then I went to install my usual software and my printer. There are also extensive keyboard shortcuts included, and you can configure them to your heart's desire. When running TimeShift, I noticed that TimeShift reported the distro as being Ubuntu 18.04 Bionic, not Linux Mint Tessa. That was a little curious. My Linux Mint Tessa reports correctly. After installation and before configuring my applications, I had to log out and back in before the menus would work. And a new issue. I got everything installed and backed up, rebooted, and I get the black screen with the message, unable to launch Cinnamon Session Cinnamon, X Session. Cinnamon Session Cinnamon not found, falling back to default session, whereupon nothing happens. I had to do a cold boot. I then used Time Shift to reset the machine to what it was before running updates. Thanks to Oliver Kelly for putting up with me. I was in pretty bad shape during this. I get thrown off easily. Now I have everything installed and booting and another Time Shift. RAM reports at 717 megabytes, MIB. The disk is 8.3 gigabytes. The boot time is 55 seconds, and the disk stops turning at about a minute 10. The boot down is 12 seconds. Themes are easy to install at installation time, but trying to figure out how to do them later may be a huge headache, or I'm simply not smart enough to figure it out. I felt like I was banging my head on a brick wall when I was in the theme window. July 5th, on the T430, I copied my Kodi home directory from Linux Mint and reauthorized Tracked and Reel to Brid. Kodi is good to go in minutes. All five of my games were found in Synaptic and installed with zero issues. On July 6th, Kodi is working fine. Indeed, everything is, except Telegram Desktop. I got into chat with the Farin OS dev again, and he was astonished to learn that the version he has in the repo is several versions old and gave me the address for the newest version and updated his repos. I purged the old one, installed the new one. I was told by some nanny feature that I should install the older one due to support issues. It works. At this point, only Audacity and Mumble have not been configured. I don't think I even got around to configuring Mumble on that one, but I could do that at any time. We just changed our Mumble server recently. July 13th. This is the second time I've tried to mess with themes, roadblock after roadblock. The default theme appears to be Windows 7, which is interesting. I had no idea I hated that menu system so much. But the standard Mint menus are much easier to navigate, which in Win 7 theme I can get to just by hitting all applications. So I managed after much struggle to get the basic desktop back to Mint or something like it. But I downloaded a theme to get the menus a tad different, and the app can't find the downloaded theme to load no matter what I do and won't apply it. So I'm still stuck with the base theme, just a base Mint theme. I'm good with that, but the whole raison d'etre of this distro appears to be theming the desktop. I'm sure there's something really, really simple that any normal person would have automatically done to make this work. But a few years ago, it worked with just a couple mouse clicks, period. Actually, there are some simple ways to change your theme, but unlike the earlier version of Farin, you probably would not get lucky and choose the right thing. I guess I need a screenshot of this screen. All right, in the show notes, I have a screenshot of Stacer showing my Farin resource usage on the T430. At this point, I was comfortable enough with the setup of the T430 and decided to begin setup on my new laptop. I had sold some old computer equipment and bought a cheap laptop, a Lenovo IdeaPad 110-15ACL with all AMD chips. I'm looking at you, Michael Tunnell. I wiped Windows 10, set up the hard drive to disable secure boot and use legacy boot, which I've been told later is not a step I had to take. I'm just used to the old days when a lot of the Linux distros just wouldn't use UEFI, and installed Linux Mint 19.1 on it, creating SDA1. Then I divided the drive in half and installed Farin OS on SDA2. I then divided that drive in half and installed OpenMandriva LX4 on SDA3. I just had to try. This time I got a complete installation, but when I rebooted, there was no boot, waiting for a disk to show up. My best guess is that it wrote the boot to a sector not in use or not recognized, or maybe it tried to write a UEFI boot and I didn't have anything else in UEFI. I tried installing it again with the same result. So to prove the partition itself was good, I installed Farin OS Next, which is about the same thing as Farin OS but with a Plasma desktop on SDA3. That worked. I then went for SDA4, dividing the Linux Mint partition and creating an extended partition, SDA4, and a partition on it, SDA5, and put my much-loved Bodhi 5 on the new partition. After playing a bit with Farin OS Next, I decided I didn't like the desktop experience it provided, and as I wanted something KDE on that partition, I installed KDE Neon 1804. Everything is just fine now. The installation of Farin OS went much more smoothly on the IdeaPad. Remember, this is the third time I've installed it this month, although the first time on this machine, so if it didn't go smoothly, there would have to be something wrong with me. There were no further issues to report. Ease of finding help. As you can contact the developer directly via a number of Telegram groups or through his GitLab reporting system, although sometimes it looks like he's using GitLab and other times he's using GitHub, the lack of a large community is a minor issue. He was always friendly and helpful, even when I had a strong disagreement with his choices, and he asked me what I would rather see instead of get offended. This was especially true in the case of Farin OS Next, where I found the desktop to be an ugly combination of Windows and KDE 4, and he just asked me for suggestions on what he could do better. Play is nice with others. Grub Customizer is available via PPA and helps make this distro an easy co-resident with others. Stability. Other than occasional issues reaching the repos, this is as stable as Linux Mint or Ubuntu. The Farin OS dev is on top of the issues nearly all the time and is reachable via many Telegram groups. I would suggest setting up on linuxquestions.org, as Bodhi has done successfully. Similar distros to check out? Well, this is Linux Mint Cinnamon Plus, and you can probably do the same things with that distro if you work at it hard enough. Ratings. Ease of installation, new user-friendly install scores, 6 out of 10. I had to work at it too much. Experienced Linux users, 7 out of 10. You'll be able to get through it, you'll get it there, but you'll wonder why, if it's just Linux Mint, it takes so much extra work. Hardware issues, 9 out of 10. Ease of finding help, 9 out of 10 if you know where to reach a developer. Ease of use, 6 out of 10. Plays nice with others, 9 out of 10. Stability, 9 out of 10. Final comments. This distro has been better and will probably be better again. The developer is a community wunderkind who is extremely motivated to get this done right. Some theming things, if you stumble across the right buttons, are easy to do, but you should expect to find a lot of "you didn't do that right" type messages. Is there a tutorial on using the theming engine? Honestly, I haven't looked. But the developer is young and motivated and has kept this distro going for several years already. It should just keep getting better. Tony, have you had any experience with Farin OS?
No, I've not really played with Farin OS. I did have a play with an ISO in a live environment just to have a look at it. But like you've said during your kind of review of it, if it's Mint, basically, for me, the stock install of Mint works really well, and I can't see a use case for me. So it doesn't really, to tell you the truth, it doesn't really interest me. So, you know, I've got to be honest. But, you know, he does put a lot of work into it, and like you say, he is open to comments. So all kudos to him for that.
Okay, well, let's get on to Tony's distro.
Okay, so this month I've been testing the new release of Debian, or Debian. I keep getting told off. I should call it Debian, but I got into the habit of calling it Debian when I first started, before I knew the history about the name.
Well, her name was not DB, so you can't do that.
No. Yeah, so I have to try and change my muscle memory when I'm talking about Debian. But it's Debian Buster, which is Debian 10. So just for information, this month's installation was done on one of my little Toshiba Portage Z30s, the specification of which is a Core i5-4210U with two cores and four threads, running between 1.7 and 2.7 gigahertz. It's got a 128 gigabyte M2 SSD, and it's got 8 gigabyte RAM, DDR3. So the first issue that I came up across was finding the correct installation ISO. They do several live installation ISOs, but they're based on the free iteration of Debian. So don't come with all the the proprietary drivers you may need. So I initially downloaded the Mate version of the live ISO, and when I booted up into the live environment, it wouldn't recognize my Wi-Fi card. So I had to go hunting around, and I eventually found the download page for the non-free ISO. But unfortunately at the moment they don't have the non-free ISO available in the live iteration, so I had to download the full version. Also, negotiating how to find ISOs and things like that, both on the official wiki and the non-official areas where you can find the ISOs, is a little bit tricky. Well, that's a slightly different issue. Also, another disadvantage of using the non-free is you don't get the Calamaris installer. You only get the traditional Debian installer, which is a little bit more tricky for new users. But anyway, I'll come on to that later. So despite these issues, installation, once I'd got the correct ISO, went smoothly. At the boot screen, you get an option to pick a voice guided install. So for those with visual problems, there is the ability to install Debian through voice control. However, it doesn't pick that up as soon as you put the disk in. You have to actually choose that, and it's the bottom of the choices of the way to install. So you would need a little bit of someone with who's sighted to start the process off for you before you could start doing it yourself. So that's a little bit of a bug if they want to make it easier for people with visual problems able to use the installer. Once you get the install, you get the opportunity to pick a language, and then your keyboard layout. There's quite a lot of languages, so obviously Debian can be used by a lot of folk that English isn't the first language. And once you've done that, you get the option to select your Wi-Fi. And on the non-free version, my Wi-Fi was detected and I was able to connect to my network. Then the process of selecting a desktop environment and a few other software choices, such as was it a server install or a desktop install. And I'd chosen to install the Mate desktop, and after a few more tick boxes, the installation started. One thing to note is I actually left the install to get on with it, because I'm used to being able to do that most of the time, and it just runs through and you come back and it says ready to reboot. But unfortunately, there needed to be a couple of things ticked as far as where to put grub. So when I came back, it had stalled at the grub section. And so you might need to keep an eye on it if you need to go off and do something else. Is remember that you're going to have to come back and finish the install off manually before it will complete.
Tony, I've had a lot of issues with installs recently, where in the middle of the installation, there's something it needs you to make a choice on.
Yeah, that's a backward step for me, because Linux was one of those things that in the past I could just click it, set it to install, it'd install, you'd come back and it'd say, do you want to restart or stay in the live installation?
I can hear Ron Popeil saying, set it and forget it.
Yeah. But yeah, in some cases, that's no longer what you can do. But hey-o, hopefully that might get picked up and someone will do something about it.
Another thing that has gotten me is how come they still have the timing out on the screen. You think during installation they'd want to keep your screen on, but they...
Yeah, that's also another issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay.
So after the installation, first thing to notice that everything worked hardware-wise, including Wi-Fi, which is... It had all worked during the install. It's not a surprise. And over the last few weeks before recording the show, I haven't seen any issues with the laptop as far as hardware is concerned. One software issue is the advanced mate menu with the ability to toggle between favorites and all applications categories is not there by default. And it doesn't have the menu that is provided doesn't have the search option. So I'm accustomed with Mint 19.1 Mate having the advanced Mate menu. So along with the workflow software, I had to install it and add this to the taskbar. Luckily, I was able to find it in Debian. I've recently installed another OS and I wasn't able to find the advanced Mate menu at all.
I can hear the people out there going, that's mate, Tony.
I'm English. It's mate.
And if you're Aussie, it's mate.
It is. So anyway, I installed this and added it to the taskbar. To me, the taskbars by default are positioned the wrong way as the taskbar that has the menu on it is at the top of the screen and the other taskbar that has the different... virtual desktop environments is at the bottom, so I switch them around because I'm an old traditionalist and Windows 95 98 workflow still works for me. So anyway, once I'd done that, I was happy. So apart from these few niggles and installing my regular software to make podcasting on the PC possible, so Audacity, Mumble, all those kind of things which aren't necessarily installed by default, once I'd got them in, done the usual updates, everything was fine from first boot. One thing to note that if you set up a root account during install, your user account is not given sudo privileges. I do believe you can go in and set it, but it wasn't a major issue for me because I'd set up a root account and root password, so I just dropped into root when I needed to do anything or use the root password when I need to do anything with password privileges. Ease of use. So I've spent most of my Linux life for the last 12 years on Debian based distros. Debian is very easy to use as an OS. As I said, the installer for the ISO I used is not the most friendly, but you can choose to install it from one of the live ISOs available. The Calamaris installer is now available on that, and that will be a more friendly experience. But Debian has all the software packages and package management and software installation that I'm used to with other Debian based OSs, so there's no problems there. Also, you do it as you'd expect, no issues with dropping into the terminal as everything's an apt command, which I'm very familiar with. You will notice that most of the software is behind the current release from the software maintainers, as Debian closes the ISO to new software at a fairly early stage. And once the release has been frozen, the only updates will be to correct bugs or for security updates. This means that the current install of Audacity is still on the 2.2 branch and LibreOffice is 6.1.52. So while the current dev from the Document Foundation is currently on 6.2.5, but unless you want to risk destabilizing the install, which has been built to be used with the packages installed or available in the Debian repository, you're already running outdated software. If it's an issue, then Debian's probably not the Linux you should be considering. So I've put a screenshot in the show notes, which shows you what resources are being used at First Boot. And if you're looking at that image, you can see that First Boot is around between 500 and 730 meg, depending on which utility you trust. But for a modern system, this is not excessive. And I was running a terminal and system monitor when taking the screenshots. Boot time from pressing the power key to working system, even with inputting username and password, is a respectable 30 seconds. So that's fantastic. Obviously, I've got decent hardware. And with all my, as with all my mobile systems, I installed the TLP utility shortly after install it, and this is to manage battery life. And in Debian 10 at Eagle, the battery monitor shows the laptop as having a whopping 15 hours remaining at 100% battery, which I thought was quite impressive. In reality, in real use, this reduces to around about the 7 to 8 hour mark with general use, but it still makes the laptop an all-day machine for using on the go. And it's around about 1 to 2 hours more of active battery life than with some other Linux distributions I've used on this hardware.
That's a lot better than that IdeaPad. It has a little three-cell battery that says it's good for 3 hours, but since it's not a brand new machine, it's really only been running about two.
Yeah, the little Toshiba is a really, really nice machine and runs really well. And like I say, it's got pretty good battery life, which is not surprising because it was designed as a business machine where people wanted as much battery life as possible. But Debian certainly does improve that slightly. So as far as ease of finding help, well, as you can expect with Debian, the wiki's got loads of information, but it's a really outdated website compared with many modern support sites. But as there's so many other distros based on Debian, if you search the web for solutions for your issues or just for general information, there's loads of information out there. So you won't have any problem finding help, but please, Debian, can you try and update the website? It's horrible. And I'm not the only one who says that. Does it play nice with others? Well, I think this greatly depends on the installer you're using. I didn't actually do a dual boot install of this particular OS, so I can't really comment, but if you're using Calamaris, then I would imagine it shouldn't be much of an issue. Maybe you could jump in here, Moss, and say what your experience.
Well, it's Debian, so you can't install a PPA. So Grub Customizer is out of the question. So you're going to have to learn to edit Grub yourself. And that's not an easy thing for a newer user.
Yeah, but as far as Calamaris as an installer, you should be
Calamaris
okay with
your
boot.
I love Calamaris. It still has some bugs, but...
Yeah. Moving on to stability. All I've put in the show notes is it's as solid as a mountain, because it is. I have not had any stability issues with it since I installed it.
It's Debian. What do you expect?
Correct. That's what I was thinking. That's why so many other distros use it as their base distro. So, ratings. Ease of installation, new users friendly. I've given it 4 out of 10 because of the fact that depending on which particular ISO you use and the fact that it is difficult to find the non-free ISO unless you know where you're looking, to just actually getting hold of an ISO that works might be a bit of a nightmare for a new user. Experienced Linux users, if you're going for non-free, then you're getting the traditional Debian installer, and that's not always as easy to work with. Hardware issues, not a problem. I've just given it a straight 9 out of 10, basically, because I go with Mossy's philosophy of nothing's perfect. Ease of finding help, again, 9 out of 10. Ease of use, I've given that 9.5 because, like I say, I'm really familiar with Debian-based distros and I don't have any problems with it. Plays nice with others. Like I say, I didn't particularly test it this time, but as Moss has pointed out, there are a few issues that might make it a little bit more difficult if you want to do a dual boot and to play around with grub settings and things. Stability, 9.5 out of 10. So if you're looking for similar distros to check out, Linux Mint, Debian Edition, which I recently reviewed, is a great distribution, and it comes with all the bells and whistles that Mint put on top. And they'll obviously, in the next few months, they'll be looking to update Linux Mint Debian Edition to the current Buster release. Deepin, MX and Anti-X.
And you have to remember with MX and Anti-X that they do not run systemd default.
That's true. So there'll be a few issues with that. And I think it's Snap that requires systemd, isn't it?
It is. And also, I would say because of that, Devuan is a distro to check out.
Okay. And then, of course, all the Debian-based other distros that are out there, particularly all the Ubuntu flavors and basically anything that's Debian based, and there's loads of those out there. If you go to DistroWatch and type, you know, looking for distros that are Debian based, you'll find hundreds of them. So final comments. My thoughts when I think of Debian 10 is that it's a little bit like black coffee of distros. Black coffee, depending on your personal preference, can be a something that's brilliant or very bland. But all coffee starts this way. You add in a bit of flavour and frothy milk and you get something completely different. And this is what I think Debian or Debian is. It's the base for a lot of very, very good distributions. And without Debian, then I think the Linux community would be a sadder place because a lot of us rely on it, even though we don't necessarily run it as our daily driver. Go on, Moss.
Can you think of Linux Mint based on Arch?
I think it might be difficult.
It might be, yes.
Well, put it this way. When Linux Mint Debian Edition used to be based on SID and was a rolling release, I think the Mint developers suddenly quite quickly realized it was creating more problems than it was worth, and that's why they were reverted back to the stable branch. So I think Arch might be a bit too much of a jump for Mint to move to. But if you do want rock solid workhorse that isn't going to change dramatically over the next 2 to 3 years, and you need a stable environment, go with Debian. You will not miss it. You know, you will not feel that you've missed out on something. If you want the latest cutting edge software, then I would suggest going and looking for something a little bit more that updates a little bit more often, and going and looking for one of the Ubuntu flavors or one of the other Debian based distributions underlying, but has a faster turnaround time as far as installing new software. Anything you'd like to add to that, Moss?
Well, as you said, Debian is what everything's based on, but most people are not happy with just Debian. It feels like you've got a really good system. It's never going to break, but you're in a straitjacket.
Yeah, and especially for podcasters and people like that that maybe need some of the new things that are coming out in, say, Audacity or other software that they use for editing either video or audio or whatever. Things progress quite quickly in the Linux world. So if you're using Debian and you're using the stock package management system, you're not going to get those updates until the next release. Whereas if you're using something else, and I know some of that can be negated by the use of snaps and flat packs, but and that should protect your system from some of the stability issues. It's still not a perfect solution, so you might want to consider a different one. But I've been really happy with the, and I've got to say, this time I have literally used this laptop for virtually 3 out of the last 4 weeks. It went away on my holiday with me, and it's come here to Woodbrook, where I'm currently at, with me, and I've been using it for the last week and a half while I've been away. So I'm really happy with it.
Okay, well, let's move on to new releases. New releases since our last show. Oh, there are a lot of them. Hardened BSD 12-12000.5.9.2, Slackle 7.2 Open Box, Deepin 15.11, Oracle Linux 8.0, BSD Release OpenSense 19.7, Sparky Linux 5.8, Network Security Toolkit 30-11210, Univention Corporate Server 4.4-1, Proxmox 6.0 Virtual Environment, Q4OS 3.8, I'll have to check that one out. FerrinOS 2019.07, which we just reported on. CloneZilla Live 2.6.2-15. Tails 3.15. FreeBSD 11.3. Debian Edu / Scola Linux 10. Debian 10 Buster, just reported on. Hunix 15. Nutix 11.1. Magia 7. Project Trident 19.06, Linux Kodachi 6.1, and Raspbian 2019-06-20.
So, feedback. We've had a feedback on the blog from Y Lee, re-episode 3, and it says, this is about Mossy's review of Bodhi last time. I believe Wiley is one of the developers. Decent, fair-minded review. As for the AR&R issue, I modified the code to address the issues you note, as well as added some minor improvements. You can try the new version if you wish. It is in our testing repo. I haven't noticed the taskbar issue, but we'll look into it. And I know there are various issues with multi-monitor setup. We are looking into some of them, but I'm unsure if they are all going to be addressed in time for our next release. So Moss responded.
Well, I'm not really using multiple monitors, just an external. Anyhow, I love Bodhi. Right now, I wouldn't live without it. I should probably mention another bug or two on the forum. Great work. I don't tend to mess with interim versions or betas or testings. You get it out on the solid release, and I'll look at it.
Yeah, I understand.
Announcements. Our next show will be recorded on August 28th, 2019. Visit our website at http://distrohoppersdigest.blogspot.com and follow us on MeWe, Discord, and Telegram at our Mintcast groups. And we can be contacted at distrohoppersdigest@gmail.com. Oh, we have our own Telegram group now. You can join that. If any of our listeners have suggestions for our music or transitions or which distros you'd like to see us try, please contact us. Before we go,
we would like to thank all those who make this project possible, starting with Joshua Lowe and the Mintcast team for allowing us to use their Mumble server,
archive.org for storing and helping to distribute this program,
Audacity, which we use for recording and editing the show,
Joshua Lowe for work on our logo,
all those who work in the teams which are creating, adapting, and maintaining the Linux distros we have reviewed this episode,
Midair Machine, creators of the song Streets of Santivo, used as our music under Creative Commons license.
Thanks to Linus Torvalds for the kernel, Richard Stallman for the GNU toolkits, and for all those who have worked behind the scenes on free and open source Libre software.
And thanks to the rest of the Mintcast team for letting us use their Discord channel and lots of encouragement. We are deeply appreciative of the warm welcome we have received in many other Discord and Telegram channels. We shall be back next month. Thank all of you for listening.